This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Hello and welcome. I'm Natalie Pynchon, and I will be reading synopses of some of the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery on June 27th, 2014. The articles featured in this podcast are on the topic of vascular disorders. The impact of patient age and comorbidities on the occurrence of never events in cerebrovascular surgery. An analysis of the nationwide inpatient sample. A clinical article by Timothy Wen and colleagues. As healthcare administrators focus on patient safety and cost effectiveness, a methodical assessment of quality outcome measures is critical. In 2008, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, published a series of never events, which included 11 hospital-acquired conditions for which related costs of treatment are not reimbursed. Cerebrovascular procedures are complex and often performed on patients with significant medical comorbidities. This study examines the impact of patient age and medical comorbidities on the occurrence of CMS-defined hospital-acquired conditions, as well as their effect on the length of stay and hospitalization charges in patients undergoing common cerebrovascular procedures. The hospital-acquired conditions occurred at a frequency of 0.49%, 1.33% in the intracranial procedures, and 0.33% in the carotid procedures. Falls or trauma and catheter-associated urinary tract infections were the most common events. Age and the presence of two or more comorbidities were strong independent predictors of hospital-acquired conditions, with a p-value of less than 0.01. The occurrence of hospital-acquired conditions negatively impacts both length of stay and hospital costs. Patients with at least one hospital-acquired condition were 10 times more likely to have prolonged length of stay and 8 times more likely to have higher inpatient costs when adjusting for patient and hospital factors. Improved quality protocols, focused on individual patient characteristics, might help to decrease the frequency of hospital-acquired conditions in this high-risk population. Microvascular decompression of a C2 segmental type vertebral artery producing trigeminal hypesthesia. A case report by Jonathan Nicholas Salin and co-authors. The authors report the case of a 52-year-old man who presented with progressive complaints, a left facial numbness and left upper extremity paresthesia that worsened when turning his head to the right. Previous evaluations for stroke, neoplasm and benign positional vertigo had been negative. Physical examination findings were significant for hypesthesia in the left V1, V2 and V3 distributions of the trigeminal nerve. Magnetic resonance imaging of the cervical spine showed the left vertebral artery passing intradurally between the axis and atlas and impinging on the spinal cord. A four-vessel cerebral angiogram confirmed the aberrant course of the left vertebral artery. The patient's symptoms failed to improve after a conservative course. He was taken to surgery for microvascular decompression and an expansile duroplasty. Postoperatively, the patient did well and reported symptom improvement, which was maintained at the six-month follow-up. Vertebral artery compression of the cervical spinal cord can produce symptoms of cervical myelopathy or cervicomedullary compression. Several case reports have linked such compression to premature or aberrant intradural entry of the vertebral artery into the spinal canal. The author's case, however, seems to be the first reported instance of trigeminal hypesthesia from vascular compression of the spinal trigeminal tract and nucleus. Morphological predictors of intraprocedural rupture during coil embolization of ruptured cerebral aneurysms. Do small basal outpouchings carry higher risk? A clinical article by Dong Hun Kang and co-workers. The authors aimed to investigate the morphological predictors of intraprocedural rupture during coil embolization of ruptured cerebral aneurysms. A retrospective analysis was conducted in 322 consecutive patients with ruptured cerebral aneurysms who were treated with coil embolization over an 8-year period. The authors analyzed morphological characteristics of the aneurysm as shown on baseline angiography in relation to intraprocedural rupture. Regarding aneurysm morphology, they classified patients according to multilobulation, presence of a daughter sac, and presence of a small basal outpouching. The incidence of intraprocedural rupture was 4.8%. In terms of aneurysm morphology, multilobulation or daughter sac was not significantly associated with intraprocedural rupture. However, small basal outpouching, occurring in 9% of the study population, was significantly associated with intraprocedural rupture. Based on the author's data, the more general subgroups of multilobulation or daughter sac were not significant morphological predictors of intraprocedural rupture, although the more specific subgroup, small basal outpouching, was. This points to the possibility that small basal outpouching, a possible angiographic finding of basal rupture, is the predominant morphological predictor for intraprocedural rupture during coiling. In addition, future comparison between coiling and clipping for the treatment of ruptured aneurysms containing small basal outpouching seems necessary. Thank you for listening. Follow the JNS on Twitter at #thejns. And please like us on Facebook at Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group. Comments on this podcast can be sent to jnspodcast@thejns.org.